Blog Talk Radio.
Up, everybody, welcome to a special edition of Sports Urban Legend. Along with my co-host, Macaulay Matthew, I'm of course with Ramo. What's up, Mac? How you doing?
Hey, man, how's it going?
I'm doing good, man. I'm glad to be doing this show with you as always, man. Thanks for coming along.
Yeah, man. Glad to be here as usual.
All right, thank you. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for checking out this episode. On today's episode, we're going to talk about, as you could tell from the title, we're going to talk about Undertaker's last ride, his final farewell as an active wrestler at tomorrow night's Survivor Series, the 30-year anniversary of his debut in the WWE. We're going to talk about that. We're going to, of course, preview the Survivor Series pay-per-view event at the end of the show today. You know, we're going to talk about the latest in MLB, you know, and, you know, with the Mets, the Yankees, and, you know, there are rumors with Lindor, you know, talk about, you know, the Giants and the Jets. as they try to finish off a tough season. And, you know, of course, talk about what else is going on in, you know, the world of sports. But, of course, you know, the number is 563-999-3529. That's 563-999-3529. Feel free to talk about any of these topics and more. We'd love to hear from you. But before we talk about the Undertaker's, legacy and, what we expect to happen tomorrow night, yeah, we're going to tip off the show with NBA. And, NBA has been the forefront, this week. You know, we had the NBA draft. We also had free agency that went down starting, I think, Friday night. So, NBA has been in the news. But before we get into the free agency frenzy that has happened, in the National Basketball Association, yeah, let's talk about this draft. For a Knicks perspective, there was rumors that they were going to go after Halliburton, with the 8th pick. But instead, the Knicks drafted Obi Toppin, the guy who reportedly they thought would have, would have been picked, in the top 5. But he was able to drop, for them. And, my thoughts, I thought initially I thought they were going to pick Halliburton, because the Knicks are in desperate need of, any good players, especially a point guard, because, the Knicks, they've been searching for a point guard, for like 20 years, they've, rarely had, a good point guard or, a star point guard. I mean, obviously they had Mark Jackson in the beginning and the end of his career. They had Jason Kidd that 1 year, but they never had like a Hall of Fame type point guard that they could rely on. So I thought they were going to, make the decision and get Halliburton, get a good point guard who could score, who basically would answer all their stuff. But, they drafted Toppin, and, I think, he should change his name to Obi-Wan Toppin, because, he's our only hope right now. This guy, he's going to be exciting, in the Garden. He's going to dunk. He's going to be like Blake Griffin, basically. He's going to just, it's going to be Lob City in New York. You're going to have, people just alley-ooping it to Toppin. I mean, I think this guy, dunked over like 107 times, So, I mean, this guy has, the swagger. He has the ability. He's like, I guess, like I was saying, he's like Blake Griffin or Amari Stoudemire, who was the last guy, who probably wanted to be a Knick. And why do I say that? Because this guy's a Brooklyn-born guy. When he found out that he got drafted to the Knicks, he cried. And yes, someone coming to the Knicks in the last 20 years, people cry. But it's usually, tears of anguish. But this guy legit cried, had tears of joy. This guy wanted to be here. It was like he took a time machine to the 90s, man. This guy literally wanted to be here. And you know what I'm saying? Like, it's only in draft night when you have players, talented players say they want to come to the Knicks. There's no superstar player who wants to come here. You know what I'm saying? So, like we've been saying on this show, since the show debuted in 2009, and trust me, nothing has changed with the Knicks. I mean, to their credit, there is hope. They Leon Rose, hired a lot of good people around him. Perrin, Payne, they got a lot of people who, in their expertise in drafting and player development, So, you know, there is some, for the first time since Donnie Walsh was the GM and Mike Woodson was the head coach, there's actually some legit signs for, you know, to see that, you know, Knicks are moving in the right direction. So, you know, Obi Toppin, he got that, you know, we got him. And then afterwards, the Knicks did a bunch of flurry of trades, man. I mean, he must have thought he was on let's make a deal, because he just kept trading the pick. It was like, I think, 29th. Then it went to 27, 25, 23. I mean, yeah. It was just bouncing around. It might have been at 1.33. And then he just made a bunch of trades. And ultimately, you know, we came up with drafting Emmanuel Quickly, who quickly, you know, has the potential, you know, to be a point guard, you know, with us, you know, once he develops into the type of player he can be. You know, he played in Kentucky, which his former head coach, Calipari, you know, confirmed it on, you know, live on the air on draft night that he's going to get traded to the Knicks. So, that, you know, that in this draft, you know, the Knicks, they got some two potential guys, you know, guys who look like they really want to be here, guys who have, you know, potential, you know, guys who play well, you know, in college, you know, obviously, you know, pandemic, of course. And these guys want to be here. And then you pair them up with R.J. Barrett, you know, and Mitchell Robinson, and if Kevin Knox stays here, you know, you got a good young nucleus. So, I mean, what's your thoughts on, you know, the Knicks and the draft night overall?
Well, I mean, the Knicks, I think they did pretty good, you know, for the draft. They got Obi Toppin. I mean, this guy looks like he could be like the next Amari Stoudemire or Blake Griffin, or he kind of actually reminds me of Kenyon Martin a bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another good analogy.
Physique, he can dunk, he can jump, you know. So I think he's going to be a very good player. But, you know, we need a point guard who could feed him the ball and, you know, throw him those alley-oops. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we can find a guy, you know, to you know, help him develop as a player. So I like that pick. I also like what's his name? Quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could be a very good player for the Knicks. You know, he's another Kentucky guy. So Kentucky, right?
He's
Kentucky guy. So I think he has the potential to be very good. But yeah, I think overall the Knicks did a good job. You know, those trade, with the exception of trading that pick to who was it? The Thunder?
Oh, yeah, that center dude. I think he's an African.
Yeah, the Clippers. They sent him, Daniel Oturo, they sent him to Clippers. You know, they had a 30 deep, and then they just gave it away for 29. So you might as well just have kept your 27th pick. Or was it the 27th or the 25th pick, whatever it was? I don't get that. I don't get what the Knicks were trying to do there, but.
Oh, well, yeah, I found out, because I think they traded him, and they traded, I think that's the was the Spanish, the Argentinian guy? I think he got traded in the Quickly trade, right? The Argentinian guy they briefly drafted? Because I think it was him.
Oh, yeah, he got traded away. Yeah, he got traded away. Yeah.
Right. So the African dude you were talking about who was drafted 33rd, Daniel Oturu, I think he got traded for a pick in the 2023 draft.
Right.
And yeah, I was wondering, I was scratching my head too. I'm like, why the 23rd draft? Why not this draft? Well, from what I've heard, in 2023 will be the first year where high school students can be eligible to get drafted.
Oh, nice.
So that's why the Knicks are so hell-bent on getting picks for 2023.
Oh, that's good. I mean, high school players used to be drafted all the time back in the day. to that rule where they said, oh, you got to be at least 19 years old or
mm-hmm.
something, you know?
Yeah, because mm-hmm. of LeBron James, you know, they didn't want
to. Yeah, guys, you know, like Kevin Garnett, Kobe, they were drafted mm-hmm. right out of high school.
Right.
So, well, it's good to know that they're going back to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because people, you know, they need choices. You know, some people, you know, like they're in tough, you know, tough situations. They, you know, they can't wait for like to spend a year in college. You know, they wanna have the option of whether they wanna enjoy spending a year or 4 years in college, or, you know, they feel like money is their priority, so they wanna get a deal locked up and not risk themselves getting injured playing a year or so in college. So,
right.
You know, it's all about, you know, options.
Right. Or if they can't make an NBA, they always have the D League. So.
Exactly. And that's why the, you know, the 2023, you know, it's like if you draft a high school player, it's basically, you know, the D League is going to be like the minor league as it was intended. You know, you can let a guy grow in the minor league for years until he's seasoned, and then you could call them up.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. Basically, you know, in the draft, you know, Anthony Edwards was drafted number one by the Timberwolves, James Wiseman, you know, Golden State Warriors, which, unfortunately they had a bad break with, you know, Klay Thompson, because, you know, when he was on his way to try to come back and recover, he re-injured himself, and now he's gone for the rest of the year again. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just a terrible thing.
Yeah, I saw that the other day. I mean, that's pretty much, yeah, that's not good, because they were looking forward to having him, Steph Curry, and, you know, some of the other young players they drafted. So now you have to wait another year for him to come back.
Uh-huh. Yeah, man, he might be injury prone right now. I mean, this might be the beginning of the end for him. You know, missing 2 years in a row, I mean, that's really scary.
Well, hopefully a full speedy recovery. We'll see.
And then third, LaMelo Ball, who, you know, who was rumored to be going to the Knicks, you know, obviously if they would have got one of the top three picks, you know, he went to Charlotte Hornet, where, you know, who knows, Michael Jordan might have a chance to finally play one-on-one against LaVar Ball, because LaVar Ball was saying he's better than Jordan. So who knows? They might play a game of horse to see who's the best of the two.
Yeah, after all these years, yep.
Yep, who knows? We'll see. And speaking of Jordan's former team, the Bulls, they drafted Patrick Williams with the fourth pick. Fifth pick, Isaac Okoro, was drafted by the Cavaliers, which, you know, everybody thought, I'm trying to remember our player again. What's his name again? Oh my God. How can I forget his name so quickly? Darn. What's the number one guy, the guy we drafted first. I'm trying to, can't believe I forgot his name. Toppin. There you go.
Oh yeah.
I even got a chance to read it. It popped in my head. Toppin. The experts were expecting him to go on the, you know, get picked in the top five. Atlanta Hawks, they draft Okeya Okongwu. Yeah, well, forgive me if I say the name wrong. Number seven, Killian Hayes. That was a guy who was definitely him. You know, he was definitely rumored to be coming to the Knicks. You know, the French combo guard. The Pistons drafted him for, you know, in the seventh pick. Eighth, you know, obviously Obi Toppin. Ninth is the Israeli small forward / shooting guard Denny Adja. I don't know how you pronounce his name. you know, and then 10 to wrap it up is Jalen Smith. You know, with the Phoenix Suns, who obviously made a blockbuster deal just a few days ago, acquiring Chris Paul. You know, what's your thoughts?
I think that's a good trade. You know, there's been a lot of trades you've been hearing, and a lot of signings too. I think that's going to be good for them. You also had some signings with Van Fleet, staying with Toronto, signing that big contract with them.
Mm-hmm.
You're hearing trade rumors now of Rockets possibly trading away Harden and
Westbrook,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of activity right now going on in the NBA.
Oh, yeah. Fortunately for us, we're the only team that's not really making any noise. I mean, the only good thing we're doing is that, you know, we're signing up, you know, players to one-year deals. And, you know, we're not taking much off the cap. So we still have wiggle room to make a possible Westbrook trade or Wall trade or hold on to this cap flexibility that we haven't had, you know, I mean, in a long time, except for the past couple of years, you know. So hold on to that. We re-signed, Peyton. We signed Nerlens Noel, you know, who should help us out, giving us a defensive presence. That's another dude who played in Kentucky. Knicks are starting to be the New York Wildcats right here. You know,
a lot of Kentucky players. Yep,
Randall, Knox, Quickly, who's here now, and of course Payne, the assistant coach.
Use Kentucky as a recruiting farm. You know,
hey, that's fine with me.
A minor league, you know.
Yeah, that program is, you know, they're battle tested, you know, in college. So, hey, that could be our unofficial minor league, our Triple A team. Hey, I'm all for it. keep it coming. Shoot, we need all the help we can get. So,
yep,
that's good. I mean, help isn't on the way because, you know, a bunch of people were thinking Carmelo was gonna come back. And to be honest with you, you know, I got love for Melo. You know, he's, you know, a future Hall of Famer. Obviously a local guy, even though I think he grew up in Baltimore as well. Born in Brooklyn, grew up in, I think, Baltimore. Memory serves me right. But, yeah, I didn't think he should have came back here. I don't think he had a desire to just retire, you know, as a Knick. I really honestly didn't see there was a fit for him to come back because this guy, you know, he wants to get a championship. You know, he's hell bent on trying to get a championship, as he should. So, you know, let him get his title. You know, let him chase the title. Who knows how many
rumors right now? I mean, I don't know if it's actually true.
The rumor is that he's close to signing with the signing back with Portland. If not, he already signed. I think he might have officially signed with them already.
Okay.
But yeah. He's back with Portland. We lost some players. Wooten, Portis,
Alfred Payton. Yeah.
No. Payton re-signed with us.
Oh, he did. Oh.
Yeah, he re-signed with us earlier today. 1 year, $5 million.
That's weird. You got rid of him and then you re-signed him again. That's weird.
Yeah, for a lower money.
Oh.
You know, they signed him for lesser money. So, yeah. Peyton re-signs. Carmelo re-signs with Portland. Van Fleet, like you said, he re-signed with Toronto. That was, like, the number one guy Knicks was after. Other than Hayward, who he signed with. I'm trying to remember what team he signed with. He signed with Charlotte Hornets. 4-year, $120 million contract. So he's gonna be playing for Jordan and LaMelo Ball. Van Vliet, he returns to Toronto, sign a 4-year, $85 million contract. Yeah, man. So a lot of teams are making moves in this you know, obviously this NBA free agency. So, yeah, Knicks got to just keep doing what they're doing. signed some veterans on the cheap, and you know, just focus on their salary cap flexibility, because like we've been saying for years, nobody's coming here, so let's not waste the money on mediocre at best players and overspend for them. So
yeah,
let's just keep doing what we're doing.
Well, hey, you know, I like the way look what they're doing. You know, they had a good draft,
mm-hmm.
trying to develop the young players, not
mm-hmm.
spending the money on, you know, these some of these free agents like Gordon Hayward, you know,
mm-hmm.
who I didn't think we needed.
Yeah,
so,
I didn't think so either. I mean, he's a good player, but you know, we need a surefire bona fide guy, especially a beast, a power, you know, a point guard type of a dude. You know, we definitely need a guy who could score and play point guard. Because it's better we just develop a player of our own like that. If
right.
we're not getting a guy who's already proven to be, you know, a leader that we need, you know. We need to spend the money on a superstar player, not a star player.
Yeah, agreed.
You know. Cause I'm tired of overspending for these type of players. So, you know, it is what it is. But shifting gears. You know what? Let's do something before, you know, let me think. Yeah, let's talk about MLB. Robinson Cano, man, don't you know he ended his career? Like, I mean, what was this dude thinking?
Yeah, not very smart. Not very smart at all.
I think he listened to the Take Me Out to the Ball Game a little bit too many times, because he thinks three strikes you're out in the old ball game. Not anymore. Not when you caught for steroid twice. He's out, man. This dude, if Brody Van Wagen foolishly traded for him after he was caught suspended, he played 50 games after being suspended, then you know, they make a horrible trade. Why is it horrible? Because not only was Cano caught suspended, you know, don't you know, they trade their best prospect. They trade their best prospect in Jared Kelenic for aging second baseman, which Lord knows they've had a horrible history with second basemen, aging second basemen, Alomar, Barriega, Juan Samuel. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. If you're going to take a chance on that guy, a guy like that, Brody Van Wagenen had to have known, if he had experience, because he was always an agent, you know, a baseball agent, you know, prior to taking this job, he would have known that they were desperate. Seattle Mariners were desperate. We could have fleeced them. We could have fleeced them without giving up Kelenic. As a matter of fact, they were so desperate to get rid of Cano's contract. 5-year, $100 million contract. I don't even remember that amount. All they had to do was take the contract back. Shoot, they were even given Edwin Diaz, who was their all-star closer at the time, who saved like, what, 57 saves prior year before we got him. But no, Brody Van Wagen was so hell-bent to make a splash that he had to give up the future in Kelenic, and the Mets are gonna feel that, because that guy's gonna be an all-star.
Yeah, the whole Robinson Cano thing. I mean, dude has to be smarter than that. I mean, taking a drug that's banned then you know that's going to show up when you're being tested. I mean, you should know. You should be smarter than that. You know it's going to come up negative. I mean, what do you think? What do you think is going to happen when you take it? You think it miraculously is not going to show up in your system when they test you? I don't know what he was thinking. What was the logic behind that? You know?
Well,
and it was a diuretic, right? I think it was a banned diuretic to, like, flush out any other performance-enhancing drug he may have taken.
And it's safe to say that he's not going to the Hall of Fame. Whatever suspicions you had of him, before he got caught, then he got caught the first time. I personally thought he was smart enough not to do it again, because the spotlight would have been on him for him getting caught the first time. Would he have done it a second time? I didn't think he was gonna do it again, or at least for extremely, extremely, extremely long time, years from now, when the heat isn't off him. So I mean, right now it shows that Robinson Cano wasn't this great play as we thought he was this whole time, because for all we know, even when he was with the Yankees, he could have been doing it. We don't know.
It's possible.
We don't know. I mean,
It seems like when these guys go to Seattle, they start taking steroids for some reason.
For real. If you don't believe him, ask A-Rod. I mean, come on. I mean, it really, that was just a waste of time. This guy was like 500 hits away from like 3,000, and now it doesn't even mean anything.
Yeah.
It's like Barry Bonds, breaking Maris's record, having like 73 home runs. Obviously the overall home run record. Hank Aaron. And then, I mean, it's just a joke. It's just an utter joke. It's a joke. Like,
yeah,
I don't even know what to say.
I don't know. He's suspended for a year, right?
Yeah, he's suspended for a whole year. And if you ask me, this year was the last game he played as a Met.
Yeah,
because
I think so.
If Wilpons would have stayed, he's coming back. He would have definitely came back. He would have definitely got the 2-year, $50 million contract that's owed to him after, after 2021. So it's a blessing in disguise, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Well, he
learned his lessons.
Yeah, Cohen's going to use that money to go after another player. Hopefully it's Bauer. Hopefully it's Springer. I would love to have Morton as the fifth starter. You slot David Peterson, who had a very good rookie year, into the pen, and hopefully Realmuto. But obviously you most likely can't get all of them. So, we have to see what they're going to do. And, this week there's been a bunch of rumors of people thinking that, LeMahieu is going to come to the Mets and all that stuff. And I just don't see it. The Yankees are going to do everything they can to hold on to him. And, I mean, we have McNeil. We could just slot him to second. I mean, we have Jimenez. We could put him at third. I mean, that's if he's not traded in a rumored Lindor trade, because obviously, both New York teams are, chasing after Francisco Lindor because he has 1 year left on his contract before he potentially enters into free agency. There's a rumor for the Mets that they would try to trade Nimmo or Davis or Jimenez or Rosario or Scaspuzzi or Wolf to try to get Lindor. Obviously there's rumors because Mets are going to have to give up a lot to try to go after him. And then of course, the Yankees, they're going to be trying to trade him as well. So
yeah.
we'll see what happens with that.
Well, yeah, it's got to be also a busy off-season, you know, for baseball as well. A lot of guys might be moving to different places, but I think the Yankees' number one priority right now is bringing back DJ LeMahieu, my cousin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the number one priority, and then you could focus on maybe going after guys like Bauer or Realmuto, you know, so, you know, we'll see.
Absolutely. And shifting gears from one of your favorite teams to another, the Giants, man, they got a nice victory against the Eagles in the Meadowlands. And
yeah.
Now they have the bye week. So what's your thoughts?
You know, the Giants, on last week's show, I said the Giants, they played well in some of these games. Right now, their record is 3-7 after they beat the Eagles last week.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at some of the games they played, it's been close. There's a lot of games they could have won this year. They could have been at 500 right now or better, you know, if they had just held on to some of those leads in those games, you know. But right now, they're 3-7, and the Eagles, who are leading the division, are 3-5-1. So right now, Giants are what? They're about one game back of the Eagles. I mean, this is how bad the NFC East is right now. The Giants, they've been losing games all year, but they're just one game back. So they still have a chance to win this division. And I like that the fact that they're having Daniel Jones use his legs now, you know, using him as a running quarterback. Teams don't know how to adjust to that. They're, you know, I like that move right now with him, but I feel like he has to throw the ball more. Hopefully that doesn't lead to, you know, mistakes, because he has fumbled the ball a lot this year. So hopefully he can hold on to the ball better. But I like the fact that they're using him, you know, to run more in this offense. But, yeah, you know, they have a bye, no game tomorrow. But hopefully when they return the next week, you know, they could expand this winning streak.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And, you know, they're going to try to extend it to 3 when they battle the Bengals Sunday.
Yep.
So, you know, good luck to your boys.
Yeah.
And speaking of bye week, a team who spend their entire season in a bye week is, unfortunately, my New York Jets, as they come back from a literal bye week, you know, and they're gonna try to snap their losing streak. Man. I don't even know what to say. It's just been a lost year, man. I mean, they had a chance to defeat the Patriots 2 weeks ago, and now they're gonna try to defeat the Chargers, you know, on the road. And what can I say, man? They gotta find a way to win this game. They have to find a way to win this game, because if they don't, man, they're just gonna they're gonna be winless. I mean, what more can I say?
And you know, right now it's not looking good for the Jets to win any games this year. I mean,
I know that. I mean, it's messed up.
They've, to tell you how bad the Jets are this year, they're putting up all-time franchise low numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They played 9 games. They scored 121 points. That's for an average of 13 points a game. And then
That's if they're lucky, man.
They've averaged 13 points a game. Their opponents have averaged almost 30 points a game.
I mean,
the offense is horrible, then the defense is even worse.
And they have an all-time horrible head coach in Adam Gase.
Well, the coach is probably going to be gone after the season. You know?
Oh, I would assume so. Common sense would tell you that's the case. You know, Black Monday doesn't come, you know, quick enough for the Jets because they gotta get rid of this head coach.
Yeah, I mean, there's some changes that are gonna have to be made, you know, because
yeah,
it's right now it's not looking at the Chargers. I mean, the Chargers are not that good either. They're 2-7, but
mm-hmm.
Chargers they have more talent right now. And the quarterback, you know, he's a very good quarterback too. He's been playing real well, Justin Herbert. So he's going to look to have a good game against the Jets. But yeah, you know, Jets, they just got turned around, man. If they can even turn around, I don't know, but they got to play much better, man, than what they've been doing this whole season. Hopefully, this bye shifts them into another gear.
Yeah, man, and they had that game against the Patriots.
That's the game they could have won. Yeah.
And they would have felt so good, so refreshed coming out of the bye week. You know, like, okay, we got to win down, you know, win, you know, in our belt.
Yeah.
You know, we momentarily got that stench of losing, you know, off of us. You know, let's try to, you know, shock the world, stun the critics that, hey, you know, we could, you know, try to win some more games here. You know what I'm saying? But it's so bad. People are like, you know, okay, we're doing really well in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, but I think we're so bad. We're so bad that he's gonna go back to college. That I honestly think so. I hope I'm wrong, but
yeah,
because this situation is really bad. We don't have nothing. We don't have nothing talent wise for the most part. We don't even know about Darnold, you know, because he don't have no protection.
Yeah,
he's being clobbered. I'm actually happy that he's you know he's not gonna play tomorrow because I don't want him to be like a ping pong. You know, at least Flacco's a veteran. You know, he won a Super Bowl, and he played well that game against the Patriots. So, yeah, I think he threw for 3 touchdowns and one costly. Let's underline that costly. Interception, which cost them basically cost them the game, you know, eventually.
Yeah.
So, you know, I say don't rush him. Don't rush Darnold. You're not protecting him. At least with Flacco, you know, he's a veteran. You know, he could try to make chicken salad out of this chicken crap situation that the Jets are going through right now. This whole season, so we'll just see what happens. Hopefully, they'll get a W. But let's be real here. This is the worst season in franchise history.
Yeah, this is the worst. This might be the Jets' worst season ever.
It is. It is the worst season. But yeah, let's shift gears. Let's shift gears of hope. And if I can't get hope, you know, with my sports teams, except for my, you know, my two beloved teams as in the Mets and the Knicks. And you know, if I'm putting Knicks in hope, you know, that means my other teams are not doing that well. So, you know, luckily the Mets and the Knicks look like they're finally moving in the right direction. Jets, man, not so much. But like I was saying, talking about hope, something that, you know, could give us hope that, hey, anything is possible is the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion that went down.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you checked that out. And, of course, you know, the highlight of obviously the cast, you know, they all reunited with each other. And, you know, obviously they had a heart. Breaking segment where they honored James Avery, you know, obviously the iconic Uncle Phil, you know, they had they were playing his clips and reminiscing about what he meant to them and the show. And basically, you know, if that was, you know, that was obviously one of the highlights of, you know, the whole reunion. And then, of course, you know, the moment that everybody was waiting for to see, basically Will Smith and Janet Huber, you know, the original Aunt Viv, finally sitting down and finally burying the hatchet, you know, about all the bad blood that led to her exiting the show. And, you know, I thought it was a very heartwarming talk to see both of them who meant so much to the show, you know, setting aside their differences and actually, you know, being raw and real with each other and them finally seeing each other from a different, you know, from each other's perspective. So, you know, I hope you got, in case you guys didn't see it, here's a clip of what went down.
I was 21 years old.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. I know.
Everything was a threat to me.
Why was I a threat?
Not you, the world. I was so driven by fear and jokes and comedy and all of that.
Yeah, you were live. You were live.
You know.
But what you didn't realize either, that I was going through a lot at home.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You didn't know. Yep. You guys didn't know. Very abusive marriage.
You know, I have children.
Yeah.
I've been divorced and got a second marriage, and I can see now the level of pain and the level of struggle that it was for you just to show up every day. And then...
But you took all that away from me.
Mm-hmm.
With your words. Mm-hmm. You know, words can kill.
Mm-hmm.
I lost everything. Reputation. Everything. Everything. And I understand you were able to move forward, but you know those words, calling a black woman difficult in Hollywood is the kiss of death.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kiss of death, and it's hard enough being a dark-skinned black woman in this business. But I felt it was necessary for us to finally move forward.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that I have blasted you to pieces.
No, it is first of all, thank you for sharing that with me. Like, I didn't know that. When I look back now, it's, you know, it's obvious that you were having a hard time, and I felt like you hated me. I could not do a 30-year celebration of this show and not celebrate you. Celebrate your contribution to this show, celebrate your contribution to my life, you know, and...
I mean, you...
I think we were just short of 27 years that we didn't speak to one another. And I'm glad we're talking again. The person I want to be is someone who protects you, not someone that unleashes dogs on you. And however...
I appreciate that.
You know, it's...
I appreciate that. I have to say, after 27 years, being here today and having the conversation that Will and I had together, it's healing. I was watching the dance episode the other day, and that's become one of the crazy, iconic...
Yeah.
They send me videos from all over the world.
On TikTok right now.
Mama's doing it.
I know.
Yeah, mama's.
Listen. The Ambiv, boy. Rocking the Ambiv.
I don't know if it's real. I feel like this is a dream. I didn't come here to have animosity. I came here to resolve. Because it's time.
You still feel like
like I'm little.
Yeah.
You still my Aunt Viv. You still my Aunt Viv.
It's so weird. You know, we've said such hateful things about each other publicly. And I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
And I'm sorry too. We good?
We good.
We good.
We are good.
Yeah, that was such a touching segment, and then afterwards, you know, they capped it off with her reuniting with the surviving cast. Obviously, there was a huge omission. Obviously, James Avery's absence was felt. You know, obviously the two Aunt Vivians finally met each other for the first time ever. And basically, she was able to reunite with everybody, you know, her former cast members, except for Alfonso Ribeiro, because, according to him, he was doing an interview with Tamron Hall. He said that he had to leave and shoot for his America's Most Funniest Home Videos. But some people, you know, question his motive and think maybe he still hasn't forgiven, Janet for, the stuff she said about him as well. So, I mean, who knows? If that's the case, then hopefully they will, mend the fences as well. But, we'll see what happened. But, it was a great reunion. You know, they honored the past and the legacy of the show. So, I mean, it was A-plus for me all around. You know, I really enjoyed it. You know, if they didn't have the original Aunt Viv pop up, that would have been the dark cloud from the whole reunion, because it would have been like, her whole memory from the show is erased. But I mean, it's good that, they honored everybody, because everybody played a role in the show throughout the 6-year run. So kudos to all of them.
Yeah, it was definitely great to see. I'm glad that they were able to make amends with the original Aunt Viv and bring her back, have everyone get together again. But yeah, it was definitely nice to see.
Absolutely. I guess shifting gears. Let's talk about The Undertaker. He's gonna return tonight, because the clock strike midnight as I'm speaking right now. So Undertaker is gonna be back inside the ring one last time. As an active wrestler, even though he did retire at WrestleMania against Undertaker, or rather not Undertaker, against the phenomenal one AJ Styles. In the Barnyard match, but he's going to pop up in the same, the same pay-per-view event where he debuted, at the Survivor Series 30 years ago, the same day they debuted that horrible egg. I mean, that horrible egg and revealed that the gobbledygooker, but that wasn't the lasting memory of WWE fans, then, obviously WWF fans at the time. And you had a guy who stood the test of times, and in order for him to be arguably the greatest superstar in WWE history, he had to adapt and change in various different ways. So here's a clip of the evolution of Undertaker. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. What's up, guys, and welcome back to another video, and today we have a brand new series. This series is called The Evolution of ... and those dots represent any wrestler you guys want to see next. We're going to start it off with The Undertaker first, so let's get right into it. The first gimmick he ever had was the Western Mortician, and that went from November 1990 all the way through January 1994, and he had an original Western look. He would wear a black overcoat, gray leather gloves, and a Stetson hat. Undertaker would make his debut with this gimmick at Survivor Series in 1990. Originally, his manager was Brother Love. During a segment on the Brother Love show, he paired with Paul Bearer. The Undertaker would go on to win his first WrestleMania match against Jimmy Snuka, which would begin the streak. There were two highlights from this gimmick. The first highlight was when he was a heel and feuding with Hulk Hogan. Undertaker would win the WWF Championship in 1991. The second highlight is his face turn when he saved Miss Elizabeth from Jake Roberts in 1992. Undertaker would introduce a brand new match, which was the casket match. Ultimately, the casket match would end his gimmick because he kayfabe died and ascended to the heavens while being inside the casket at Royal Rumble in 1994. The next gimmick was the Deadman, and that lasted from August 1994 all the way through October 1996. The Undertaker made his return at SummerSlam in 1994 with an updated attire. Instead of using gray, his leather gloves, tie, and boot covers were now purple. He would return to have a match with the fake Undertaker. Eventually, he would get his revenge on Yokozuna, who killed his old gimmick. Around this time, he was forced to wear a gray mask, because King Mabel and Yokozuna actually injured him by breaking an orbital bone. In August of 1996, he had a boiler room brawl with Mankind at SummerSlam. This was when Paul Bearer turned on him to align with Mankind. Just a couple of months later, they would have a Buried Alive match at In Your House. Undertaker did go on to win this match, but the Executioner, along with other heels, attacked him after the match. All of them buried him alive, which would put an end to this gimmick. After that, we saw the Lord of Darkness, and that was from November 1996 through December 1998. The Undertaker was reborn and made his return a month later. His entrance was awesome because he came down from the rafters in a black leather attire with bat wings. Although he only wore those bat wings once, he did continue to dress in all black. The Undertaker also had a black teardrop below his right eye. The Lord of Darkness gimmick was during a time where he had supernatural powers such as starting a fire and creating lightning by pointing his finger. What a savage. This would be the same character that The Undertaker used to fight in his first Hell in a Cell and Inferno match. Undertaker did bring out the old Western Mortician attire one last time when he was in a match with Psycho Sid in the main event of WrestleMania 13. They would write off this gimmick by having Kane put The Undertaker in a casket and lighting him on fire. Next up, we have the Ministry of Darkness, and that lasted for the whole year of 1999. In late 1998, while feuding with Stone Cold Steve Austin and Kane, The Undertaker would mention a Ministry of Evil as well as the Dark Days that would soon take over. This was a hint at the future of The Undertaker being the most demonic he's ever been. Later, he would form his faction known as the Ministry of Darkness. During this time, he would start to use his TX symbol by wearing it on his tights and even crucifying people. After being buried alive at the Rock Bottom pay-per-view in 1998, he would return right before the 1999 Royal Rumble in a black hooded robe with a goatee. The Ministry would continue to run dominance in the WWF as top heels. At one point, he kidnapped Stephanie McMahon and attempted to marry her at a dark wedding. The Undertaker said he was just answering to the higher power, which was later revealed to be the boss, Vince McMahon. Shortly after losing the WWF title, The Undertaker would pair Big Show and won the tag team titles at SummerSlam in 1999. However, he tore his groin, which required him to take some time off. To write him off TV, he would refuse to participate in a casket match against Triple H and just kayfabe walked out. Next up, we have the American Badass, and that was from May of 2000 all the way through December of 2001. Undertaker would take off 8 months to heal those injuries. Undertaker made his return at Judgment Day in May 2000. This Undertaker was something we've never seen. This was the American Badass, where he was a biker with a bandana, sunglasses, a jean shirt, and a motorcycle. While he was still one of the most dominant members of the roster, he was viewed as a human. His wife Sarah was brought in, and he spoke as a normal human being rather than his demonic promos. Undertaker would also change his finisher from the Tombstone Piledriver to the Last Ride. After that, we have Big Evil, and that was from January of 2002 through November of 2003. Big Evil was one hell of a shocking heel turn. Undertaker attacked Jim Ross on Raw. The Undertaker now had a new dyed jet black haircut and showed us his bullying attitude. He defeated RVD to win the Hardcore Championship. He would become the WWE Undisputed Champion, where he would end up saying that he will do whatever he wants. During his championship run, he would assault superstars who he thought didn't respect him. One example would be rookie Randy Orton while he was still a face. Eventually, Undertaker turned face by showing Jeff Hardy respect. Big Evil would become more of an extension of the American Badass. Undertaker would feud with guys such as Vince McMahon, Big Show, and Brock Lesnar. In 2003, Kane would bury Undertaker alive, which would leave him out of action for a few months. Next up, we have The Phenom from March of 2004 all the way through October of 2010. While Undertaker did experiment with a more human persona, he did return to his old roots. Undertaker made his return at WrestleMania 20 to face off against Kane. This gimmick was a combo of all of his previous gimmicks. He wore his Big Evil attire with a long leather trench coat and a hat. Paul Bearer would align himself with The Undertaker again, but Undertaker later found him as a weakness, so he proceeded to bury him alive. The Undertaker seemed invincible during this time because of his booking. He got destroyed on many occasions, but he would keep coming back. The first time was when him and Randy Orton were feuding with one another. While fighting in a casket match, Randy and his dad burned him inside a casket. Undertaker would be back several months later from a burning casket. Two other great feuds during this time were against Batista and Edge. Undertaker defeated both men at WrestleMania 23 and 24, keeping the streak alive, as well as winning the world title. Vicky Guerrero would later strip Taker out of his title, which continued his feud with Edge. They had a TLC match at One Night Stand. Undertaker would go on to lose, therefore he was banned from the WWE. Undertaker then returned to face Edge in a Hell in a Cell TLC match at SummerSlam, in which he won. Taker would continue to feud with La Familia for the rest of the year. Undertaker had two classic matches at WrestleMania with Shawn Michaels, one of which was Shawn's retirement. Finally, in 2010, Kane and Undertaker began feuding with one another. With the help of the Nexus, Kane was able to bury alive The Undertaker, which would put him out of action for 5 months. And we have Undertaker's last gimmick change, and that was The Last Outlaw, and that was from April of 2011 to the present time. Undertaker would make his return in April of 2011. Triple H interrupted him, and they both looked at a WrestleMania sign in the arena. Both men did not say one word, but the stare down was one of the most intense moments in wrestling history. Taker would go on to feud with Triple H for WrestleMania 27 and would win that match. The two would have a rematch for the next year in a Hell in a Cell, and that was labeled as the end of an era. They were the last two of their generation still going at it. Taker would win yet again. Even though they labeled that match as the end of an era, Taker continued to wrestle. He would put on a classic match with CM Punk at WrestleMania 29. At this point, Undertaker's streak was 21-0. 1 year later, and Brock Lesnar was the man to beat the streak at 21-1. Undertaker would still not retire. He came back for 4 matches in the year of 2015. Finally, in 2016, he had a Hell in a Cell match with Shane McMahon, and Undertaker was victorious. He also returned at the 900th episode of SmackDown. Undertaker said he didn't want WrestleMania to define his legacy, which means he can be returning at the Royal Rumble. Who knows? And that's it, guys. That is the evolution of The Undertaker, a long career that is still going. I hope you guys enjoyed the new series. If you did, please leave a like and share this. Comment down who I should do next, because I feel like the series could be something big on this channel, but you guys gotta let me know if you want to see more. As always, thanks for watching the video, guys. I hope you all enjoyed it. If you did, please subscribe for more. Also, make sure to follow me on Twitter at Valenplana. Check out my other channel, Official Life Facts, and I'll see you all later.
All right, well, hope you guys enjoyed that, and looking forward to seeing, you know, what memorable thing Undertaker is going to do, you know, at WrestleMania. But let's before the show ends, let's talk about, you know, let's do our predictions for Survivor Series. All right, let's see. All right, we're going to have the traditional Survivor Series. You got Team Raw, which has AJ Styles, Keith Lee, Sheamus, Strowman, and Riddle, formerly known as Matt Riddle, versus Team SmackDown, which has Kevin Owens, Jey Uso, King Corbin, Seth Rollins, and Otis.
That's a tough one.
You know what? I'm going to say Team Raw. Team Raw seems more stacked. They got Keith Lee. They have Braun Strowman. And then obviously
you have gone to the... Well, actually, it's not... I wish they would go to, like, the full... Make most of these matches Survivor Series matches.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, two or three.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're trying to make Survivor Series with bragging rights.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I got Team Raw.
I'm going with Team Raw as well.
Yeah, Team Raw is stacked, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins, I mean, you got mid-carders. You got King Corbin. You got Jey Uso, who obviously is a tag team specialist. And then you got Otis, who was the Money in the Bank winner, and they just basically stole the title from him because they didn't know what to do with him. Let me see what else. So then you got the women's version of Team Raw. You got Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler, Lana, Lacey Evans, and Peyton Royce versus Team SmackDown, which is Bianca Belair, Ruby Riott, Liv Morgan, Bayley, and Natalya. Now I was gonna originally say Team Raw because you know they got Nia Jax. But I think Team SmackDown is going to win because of Bianca Belair. This is going to be her moment to shine.
Yeah, I'm going to go with... Nah, I'm going with Team Raw again.
Okay.
I'm going with Team Raw, yeah.
Oh, and another thing. Nia Jax is going to put her through a table again. She's not going to wait until Raw. She's going to put her through a table again, and that's going to basically take out of the match.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then now you're going to get to the bragging rights kind of thing. I mean, obviously, the traditional Survivor Series elimination matches, but now you got Bobby Lashley, the Raw United States Champion, versus SmackDown Intercontinental Champion Sami Zayn. I mean, barring Bobby Lashley's sisters attacking him, thanks to their relationship with Sami Zayn, Bobby Lashley's going to destroy him and get revenge for that horrible storyline they had years ago.
Yeah, I see Lashley winning this as well.
Yeah. And, yes, this championship versus championship match is a non-title match, so it's not a unification match for all of these upcoming matches as well. New Day, Kofi Kingston, and Xavier Woods, the Raw Tag Team Champions, are going to fight against the Street Profits, Angelo Dawkins, and Montez Ford, who are obviously the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. I could see this going either way, to be honest with you. But I think the Street Profit needs the smoke. So they're gonna get this W. The New Day don't need this win. Street Profits is gonna win this.
Man, this one's tough. But yeah, I agree with you. I think I'm gonna go with Street Profits as well.
And I'm gonna tell you how it was gonna end too. Montez Ford from the heavens on top of Xavier Woods for the victory. I'm calling it.
It could happen.
Then you have Asuka, Raw Women's Champion, versus Sasha Banks, SmackDown Women's Champion. Yeah, and these two have been feuding a lot, you know, especially when Sasha Banks was a heel, when she was allied with Bayley. So they've had this match many times, or as a matter of fact, probably a few months ago, or I'm pretty sure they've had that match. So, My gut is telling me Asuka's going to win, but I think Sasha needs this victory to, like, re-solidify herself because You know, she's always been on the short ends of these type of rivalries. You know, especially as a champion. So I think Sasha's gonna try to reestablish herself as the legit boss. So
yeah, I'm going with Sasha.
Sasha's gonna win this. I'm going against my gut, which I normally don't advocate. And speaking of advocate, I'm talking about the tribal chief's counselor, Paul Heyman, client, Roman Reigns, the tribal chief, the SmackDown Universal Champion. He's going to be battling against the new WWE champion of Raw, Drew McIntyre. And obviously, this match can go either way. This is what Triple H was mentioning a few weeks ago as this is the rivalry that they want to be the next Raw, I mean, the Rock and Austin rivalry. So as a result, Drew McIntyre pulled an upset, which was only foreseen by me and Drew McIntyre, and obviously Vince. You know, Drew upset Orton, and as a result, he's facing Roman Reigns tonight. I mean, yeah, he's facing Roman Reigns tonight. Champion versus champion non-title match. And like I was mentioning, I could see either of them winning, but I think Drew's going to win this. He just won the title back. Roman Reigns was talking a lot of smack to him. Unless they're going to fight at WrestleMania, which I don't see it happening next year, I think Drew's going to win this.
Yeah, this one's tough, but I'm going to go with Roman Reigns winning this one.
Okay. It would be a lot more interesting.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Reigns.
Yeah, it would be a lot more interesting if Roman Reigns would win it. It would definitely build a feud if Roman Reigns win it, talks more smack, and then Drew McIntyre is going to have to put that in his rearview mirror until they're both on the same show again. And then, you know, get his revenge that way. Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, they're going to have a dual brand battle royale, but I mean, the only battle royale we care about is the one that's coming in 2 months at Royal Rumble. So, you know, so basically we'll see who the participants are, you know, in that match. But yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't think anything else happened on WWE. NXT, Leon Ruff, you know, he recently upset Johnny Gargano to become the new champion, the new NXT North American champion. And he had a title defense match, which he was about to lose to Johnny Gargano. But Damian Priest purposely knocked out Leon Ruff in order for Leon Ruff to retain the title. Basically, Leon Ruff is a black same that guy who was with Carmella. Trying to think of that guy's name.
Oh, I can't remember
the guy's name.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he was such a fan favorite, and then they turned him heel. I mean, yeah, see his face. I just can't remember his name for whatever reason. But you guys know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, definitely.
Yeah, I just can't remember his name. By any case, he was able to retain it, and you know, basically Damian Priest was using him as a pawn in his feud against Johnny Gargano. So basically Leon Ruff you know, spoke to him about how he was embarrassing him backstage, you know, I mean on the show, and you know, he knocked him out and all that stuff. So he got his revenge on Damian Priest and slapped him and told him don't make him into a joke, which I approved of, you know, because, you know, Damian Priest obviously has a feud with Johnny Gargano, but He's basically mocking, you know, Leon Ruff at his expense. You know, he's the butt of the joke. So, that the feud between all three of them is growing now. Trying to think what else.
There's also a Royal Rumble, looks like, or Battle Royal, whatever.
Yeah, I said that. From what I saw, they didn't mention the participants.
Right.
So, yeah, that was the last thing I said before I moved on to NXT. Because it doesn't say what the participants are. So, we'll just have to see tonight to see who's going to be in the match tonight. So, okay, I can't remember what else I was going to... Oh, yes, Pat McAfee and, what was it? What's the name of that group? He's with that British group. They were basically... Finn Balor, he popped up after he had his he broke two bones in his jaw when he had that fight with Kyle O'Reilly from the Undisputed Era. He finally came back to talk about, you know, his reign you know, as a champion, because he wasn't able to defend his title because of his injury. So basically he revealed that the Undisputed Era got reunited and they're going to feud with Pat McAfee and his group. I forgot the name of his group off the top of my head. So
yeah,
that's basically that
right now.
So basically, in AEW, John Moxley revealed that his wife Renee Young, she's, you know, she's pregnant. So congratulations to her. And
congrats.
And, you know, of course, John Moxley also. And trying to think. What was I going to say? What else happened? Yeah, Will Hobbs, he turned heel and attacked Cody Rhodes and Darby Allin. And he joins Team Taz with Ricky Starks and Brian Cage. Trying to think what other anything else memorable happened. Basically, Johnny Moxley is going to be facing. He's going to be facing Kenny Omega for the AEW championship. And Jericho and the Inner Circle, they all partied in Las Vegas after MJF and Wardlord joined their group. So let me see. What else happened? Oh, well, NXT, they're going to have the War Games pay-per-view coming up soon. But, yeah, that's basically all I could think of that major that's happening. But before we go quickly, let me see if I could test your knowledge on the people who Undertaker fought in order.
At WrestleMania?
Yeah. Let's see if you can remember. Do you remember what was the first WrestleMania?
Yeah, that was WrestleMania 6 against Jimmy Snuka. No, not WrestleMania. Was it WrestleMania 6? I think that was WrestleMania 7.
Correct. WrestleMania 7.
Yeah.
Who was the next person? Let's see if you could do a streak with you remembering all the opponents he had in order. If not, the game will end. Okay, WrestleMania 7. Who was the second opponent?
Wow, WrestleMania 7. WrestleMania 7 was Jimmy Snuka. Wasn't that?
Yeah, seven was Snuka. Who was the second opponent?
Eight was Jake the Snake.
Yes, two.
I remember that.
What's
WrestleMania
three?
9 was Giant Gonzalez.
That's right. 3-0. What's his fourth opponent?
WrestleMania was at WrestleMania 9 was Yokozuna. WrestleMania 10. No. Actually, WrestleMania 9 was Giant Gonzalez. I said WrestleMania 9 already. WrestleMania 10 was. No, he wasn't at WrestleMania 10 because that year he was just still buried. So WrestleMania 11, it was. WrestleMania 11, well, let me think. WrestleMania 11, was that Diesel? No, WrestleMania 12 was Diesel, I think. Who's his opponent at WrestleMania 11? Damn it. I can't even. Let me think here. Give me some clues on WrestleMania 11.
WrestleMania 11 was in Hartford, Connecticut. It was at the Hartford Civic Center.
Uh-huh.
This was in 95.
Right. Well, give me the person, something about the person.
Okay, if I give you this, you're going to know. Okay, I'll give you a clue. This guy is tall.
Oh!
You got it now.
Wait, let me think here. WrestleMania 11? No, WrestleMania 11. No, WrestleMania 11. Was this Psycho? No. King Kong Bundy.
Correct.
King Kong Bundy, WrestleMania 11. Yeah.
Correct.
And then next year, he fought Diesel at 12.
Yes.
13 was Sid.
Correct.
14. Was that Kane? I think that was the one where he fought Kane.
Final answer?
Yeah, I think 14 was Kane.
Yes, it was Kane.
15.
He infamously tombstone Pete Rose.
Right, right. And
I think
15.
I think he tombstone Pete Rose the year prior to that too, because one of them was in Boston. And I think the other one was in Philly. I think.
No,
yeah. So.
15. Well, we got this on the last on my show on my podcast. 15 was Big Boss Man.
Yep, where he infamously hanged them at the Hell in the Cell.
Yep. What was it? I think after the next one was 16. I don't think he was in that one. 17, I think.
Correct.
It was Triple H.
Yes.
18, Ric Flair, I think.
Correct.
Because 18 was like that was the Hulk Hogan versus Rock, I think. WrestleMania.
Correct.
19.
And that WrestleMania, he was 10-0, and he did the hand thing.
Showing
the streak when they finally recognized there was a streak that he had.
Right. WrestleMania 19, got this also on my show. Wait, what was before? Yeah. WrestleMania 19 was A-Train and Big Show. We got that question from the last show.
Correct.
The next year, I think that was Kane. That was also from the last show we got.
Mm-hmm.
And this was another question from my show. Randy Orton does WrestleMania 21.
Correct.
Damn. After that, it's damn. What was after that?
So Orton was at Richland.
Was that 21? Was it?
Correct.
That was it.
Who did he face at WrestleMania 22? You're 13-0 right now.
Oh, yeah. This was also a question. Mark Henry at the thing.
Casket
match. And then the year after that, this was also another question from my show, Batista.
Mm-hmm.
So for the world heavyweight,
right?
This one as well, Edge the next year.
Mm-hmm.
That was also for the world heavyweight. Wasn't that a bad blood match? Or a Hell in a Cell something?
Which the Edge one?
Yeah,
it was a submission match.
Oh, okay. All right, so that was the hard ones. And then, after that, it was just Shawn Michaels and Triple H back-to-back, I think. It was like Shawn Michaels 2 years in a row and then Triple H 2 years in a row.
Right.
And then CM Punk and then Goldberg, or not Goldberg, Brock Lesnar.
Yep.
Who was after Brock Lesnar?
I'm giving you one guess because I was lenient. You could have been eliminated for that giant, that King Kong one. But
I already said Giant Gonzalez beforehand, and then I messed it up.
Right. So I'm being lenient. Who is this person? You got one guess for this.
After Brock Lesnar?
Yes.
Wow. Was it?
So I think you're gonna win out after this.
Well, there's Bray Wyatt.
Final answer?
Shane McMahon after that. Then Roman Reigns. When will he beat Roman Reigns? And then, of course, the John Cena several years ago. And then this year, AJ Styles. I think that's about it.
What is Undertaker's record? You only have one guess quickly.
Wow. Oh. What? 26-1?
Is that your final answer?
It's my answer.
I'm sorry, you're incorrect. It's 25-2.
Oh. Who is the second loss? Oh, Shane
Roman
McMahon.
Reigns.
Oh,
Roman
yeah, Roman
Reigns.
That's right. Right.
Who Undertaker himself said he should have been the guy who he lost to. He should, the streak should have ended with him instead of Lesnar because Lesnar didn't need it because, you know.
Oh,
he,
yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
But, I mean, Lesnar's won. I mean, he was a credible person to lose to. And apparently it was Vince McMahon's choice, too.
Yeah, I forgot Roman beat him. Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a good job, man.
Yeah. Remember a lot of his, especially his early matches. I remember those. I have a lot of those on VHS still, on DVD.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say hi.
Those are the tough parts. So, basically, you know, you got the tough parts out. So.
Yeah.
And that's so pat yourself on the back, man, and you earned it.
Thank
you.
You earned it, and
hopefully Undertaker will do something memorable tonight. As, you know, we bid him farewell, you know.
Definitely.
30-year anniversary of his debut. So we'll see what happens.
Should be good.
Yeah, should be. So anything you'd like to say before we head out?
I don't know. Everyone have a good Thanksgiving. Check out my show, I'm Mac. Check your local listings and come back here. Check out Sports Over Legend. Only on Block Talk Radio every Saturdays at 11.
Yep, you heard the man. Check out both shows. Check out IMAC. Check out Sports Urban Legend every Saturdays at 11. But I might be doing it on Friday night at 11 this upcoming Friday instead. So check it out there. Check out my YouTube channel, Sports Urban Legend TV. Got some new episodes up there, so feel free to check them out. And of course, come back, check out Sports of Religion. He's Macaulay Matthew. I'm William Ramon. I'll see you guys next week, but this time on Friday. Peace.